Welcome to the Adoption and Foster Care Journey, a podcast to encourage, educate, and equip you to care for children and youth through adoption, foster, and kinship care. Hosted by an adoptive mom with over 22 years of kinship and adoptive parenting experience, she's on this journey with you. Please welcome Sandra Flack.
Now all glory to God, who is able through his mighty power at work within us to accomplish infinitely more than we might ask or think. That, of course, is Ephesians 3:20, one of my favorite verses. And I am Sandra Flack. Welcome to this episode of the Adoption and Foster Care Journey. Thank you for joining us today. And I pray that you will be encouraged through today's episode. We have a returning guest, a fellow adoptive mama guest, who is now an author. We're going to talk about her adoption journey and her book. She'll be with us shortly. I can't wait for you to hear her story. But first, please check out one of the invaluable resources we have for you.
Natalie Vecchione of the FASD Hope Podcast and Sandra Flack of the Adoption and Foster Care Journey Podcast would like to invite you to join their Hope for the FASD Journey, a virtual support community for parents and caregivers raising individuals with an FASD, diagnosed or not. This faith-based community includes an online bi-monthly support group, a monthly VIP conversation, and a private Facebook group which includes a video devotional from Natalie and Sandra every Saturday. To register, visit justicefororphansny.org/training/FASD.
While this podcast is not solely about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders or FASD, I am a mom of two kiddos. Can't really say they're kiddos anymore. One is 18 and one is 20. But both were diagnosed with fetal alcohol syndrome about a year or so after we adopted them. So I understand how difficult this parenting journey can be, raising kiddos with trauma. And if you're an adoptive parent, a foster parent, or a kinship caregiver caring for a relative child, then we all are caring for kids who have experienced trauma on one level or another. But many of us are raising kids who have also been prenatally exposed to alcohol or other drugs. We may not even know it, or maybe they're diagnosed with a whole host of other things, which really FASD could very well be the overarching cause for the challenging behaviors we may be dealing with. But either way, I have become a firm believer that every adoptive, foster, and kinship caregiver must absolutely be understand the impact that not only trauma, but prenatal exposure has on a developing brain. And then, of course, which presents as behaviors in our kiddos. And we're just wanting to get the behaviors straightened out, right? But really, we may be parenting a kiddo with a brain difference. Their brains just work differently, and we need to understand that. And then we need to understand how we can then parent them and so that they can be more successful. So we offer not only the support group that you just heard about, which we have over 20 parents and caregivers in that group. It's a faith-based group. I believe it's the only faith-based FASD support group in the world that I know of. It's a vital support to those of us who are in that group. But also, I offer coaching, one-on-one coaching for parents and caregivers, along with our training, the FASD training. So due to a very busy month of traveling for me and speaking on the topic of FASD, we're not going to be having another training online until May. So if you're looking for that introduction to FASD, sometimes we call it a lunch and learn. It's just a 1 hour opportunity to really learn all of the basics about FASD. The next one of those will be offered online on May 8th. It's an hour of training, as well as some time for Q&A at the end. It's great for any parent who's trying to learn a little bit more, or maybe you already are living it and you know it, but you want others in your child's life to be trained and understand FASD as well. And that could be, grandparents, adult siblings, babysitters, youth group leaders, Sunday school teachers, bus drivers, school teachers, anybody in your kiddo's life who you think would benefit from understanding the impact of prenatal exposure on a kiddo and how to best interact with that child. Because this is a free introduction to FASD, it's a great support, a great resource. So I hope you will check that out. I am offering a little bit more in-depth workshop. This is a 3-hour FASD online workshop, and that will be May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern time. The one on May 8th is at 1 p.m. Eastern, and then the 3-hour deep dive, it's sort of a deep dive, it's starting to dive in a little bit deeper than the intro anyway, that is at 7 p.m. Eastern on May 16th. And it's the intro one is not a prerequisite for the 3-hour one. You could do one or the other. It's just the 3-hour one. We go a little bit deeper. So whichever one that you are interested in, there is a registration fee for the 3-hour. But all of the workshops and even the coaching and the support group, you would learn more about that, about those, and be able to sign up for any of those on our website at justicefororphansny.org. Just click on the training tab at the top of the page and you'll see the drop down for FASD. All of the FASD resources are there, and you can sign up for anything that you're interested in. And speaking of that travel that I will be doing in April, if you are in North Carolina or can get to North Carolina, I will be leading an FASD in-person workshop at the Renew Retreat. And this is a retreat for adoptive and foster parents. It could be a single parent or it could be both of you. Many, many couples do attend. I was there last year and it was just phenomenal. I highly recommend it. And so I will be there. It is on April 18th through the 20th in Swansboro, North Carolina, near the ocean. An amazing retreat. Like I said, it is organized by Jody Jackson Tucker. Many of you know Jody, or at least know of her Second Mother's Bible Study. She also was the international coordinator for Orphan Sunday for many, many years as well. She's an amazing adoptive mom, and this retreat really does renew and recharge and nourish the families that attend. So I hope that you'll check that out. I will be there and I will be teaching an FASD workshop as well. So you can learn more about the retreat and sign up for that at renewretreat.org. And there is a link in the show notes for any kind of website that we talk about, whether it's the JFO website for the training or for the Renew Retreat. And our guest will have a website as well. So you can find that all in the show notes for this episode. And please be sure to subscribe to this podcast or follow it, leave a review. We are also on YouTube. If you'd like to watch your podcast, Justice for Orphans has a YouTube channel. All of our podcasts now are there. You can watch the video version if that's your jam. So follow us, like us, leave a review. That will help assure that other adoptive and foster parents looking for a podcast like this can find us much easier, I guess, is a better way to say that. So anyway, instead of rambling on, I am going to introduce you to our returning guest. Jessica Hurlbut is a wife, pastor, podcaster, and mom of 5, 2 autistic and 2 adopted and 1 typical teen boy. She and her husband, Greg, are lead pastors of New Testament Church in upstate New York. They are like way, way, way upstate, almost to Canada. And they oversee a network of churches in the North Country. Jessica and her husband are also host a weekly podcast called The Full Spectrum Parent, the only faith-based autism parenting podcast. And her first book, about to be released, Unlimited Motherhood, Overcome 12 Limits That Overwhelm and Conflict Our Hearts, just hit the shelves, actually. So please welcome back Jessica Hurlbut. Hey, Jessica.
Hey, thanks for having me here, Sandra.
I am so excited to have you back on the show. I know over the years you've been on a couple times before. In fact, I think the last time we chatted, it was in the midst of COVID. And you were really struggling to get two of your kiddos with autism, the supports and resources, because online school was not cutting it.
No, I don't want to go back to that season. I'm glad we're in a better season now.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad too. So you and your husband, Greg, have five kids.
Yep.
Tell us about your family.
Sure. So we're pastors in upstate New York, and I have my oldest is going to be 16 in a week. He's counting down the days because he'll get his license. No, his permit, not his license. And he's typical. And then my daughter, Mara, is 15 and she has severe autism. And then we adopted a sibling group of two through foster care, Isaac and Emma, and they are 9 and 10. Actually, 10 and 11. Their birthdays are all so close. And then I had a biological child in between fostering, and his name is Jacob, and he is also 11, and he has severe autism also. So we have, all kinds of different, blessings and needs going on with our kiddos and our family. But, I've really come to this place where it's hard sometimes, but I also see the beauty in it all. I really, really do. And every one of my kids is just so special to me. So yeah, just a little bit about us.
We call that blessed chaos, right?
Yeah, that needs to be like a sign above my door, like warning everyone before they come in, like, oh, doormat would be better.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you. Our listeners are, a lot like us. They are primarily adoptive moms, foster moms, and we always love to hear adoption stories. So would you mind sharing a little bit about how you and Greg decided to pursue adoption or why you pursued adoption?
Oh, I remember everybody thinking we were crazy at the time. I do remember that. So I'm sure some of your listeners can relate to that. But ever since I was a teenager, I have always wanted to adopt. I don't know if I watched like a Hallmark movie about it. I can't pinpoint why. I know it's God now, looking in hindsight. But I remember even asking when me and my husband were dating if he would ever adopt a child. And he was like, I think he kind of knew it was one of those make or break questions. So don't answer it wrong. He was like, I think I would be open to the possibility. So like he passed that test then. But yeah, we had a couple of our own. We had Jer and Mara. And really, honestly, it was after my daughter was diagnosed with autism. It was about a year and a half later. She started going to school in an ABA program, but I had gone from working full-time to part-time to not being able to work at all. Partly choice, partly not choice, because my daughter was unable to kind of be watched at the time by a good friend of mine who was our daycare provider, because she was having a lot of meltdowns. And so I had found myself in this season where I was a stay-at-home mom, not what I expected. I pictured a stay-at-home mom being a different kind of scenario. And I really spent a year and a half feeling, just to be honest, very bad for myself, like kind of always repeating, like, why is my life so hard? This is so hard. This isn't fair, God. And at one point, about a year into my complaining, God kind of stopped me in my tracks, and he just dropped this thought into my heart. And I knew it was him because it was so contrary to what my inner dialogue was saying. And he said, what is one thing you can do now, Jess, that you couldn't do before? And I just got, honestly, a little bit perturbed at God, because I thought, nothing. Like I can't work. I can't do ministry. Me and my husband were youth pastors at the time. I had to lay down ministry, lay down work. Couldn't do family vacations. Couldn't go to a restaurant with my daughter. Couldn't go to a park because she'd have a meltdown and have to carry her out. I mean, like, just felt so, so, so limited. And he just kept saying, what's one thing you can do now that you couldn't do before? And eventually I actually found an old journal one day, because that question kept just kind of gnawing at me for about a week. And I found an old journal where I had written when I was in college about adopting one day. And it was almost like God resurfaced that dream in my heart. And when I thought about it at first, I thought, this is the worst time. I have a child with severe autism. We're in the middle of trying to figure out how to navigate her needs. But then there was a part of me that realized I had always thought, if I want to adopt one day, I think I want to be home full time. Because I would want to be able to bond with that child, who wasn't my biological child, and really invest that time if, they're going to be a part of my family forever. So I realized, in some ways, this is the worst time. But in other ways, it was the best time. And my daughter was going to school full time because she was, you know, in a program for kids with autism. So during the day, it was kind of home just waiting for her. So I realized if I was going to foster, I'd do it now because I'd have this chunk of time. My house is empty if I had a baby or a toddler, and I'd really get that chance to bond with them and like use the season that I was complaining about, like realize there was something beautiful in that and something that was good. And so that's how the process started. And soon after we were certified, we got the call to foster my son, Isaac. We didn't know that we would be adopting him. So it was a little bit of a risk, right? You know, you just don't know. You're just kind of providing a safe place for them. And of course, we immediately fell in love. He was a newborn. And my goodness, I was in trouble immediately. My husband would always say, listen, and he would tell the caseworker this. It was very embarrassing. He'd say, listen, if you come to get him, we're fleeing the border to Canada. And I'm like, stop saying that. We live right on the border of Canada, so it's only a 5-minute flee. But I was like, stop telling people that. And he's like, I'm serious. So we fell immediately in love with him, but kind of everything with open hands, right? And I found out a couple weeks later I was pregnant with my son, Jacob, which was crazy timing. So I thought, oh my goodness, I have a newborn and now I'm pregnant. But again, we didn't know what was going to happen with Isaac. So again, I said, God, whatever you want, you know, he might only be in our house for a couple months and then I'm going to have a baby of my own, whatever you want, God. And about 6 or 7 months into my pregnancy with my biological son, I was still doing visits with Isaac's parents and his mom told me she was pregnant. Wow. And so and she was like, I'm so excited. And I realized, oh no, she was, you know, talking like, I can't wait. And I'm getting a nursery, but I knew, and she knew, but was kind of living in denial that she was going to federal prison. She had a sentence. And so she didn't go until the baby was born. But then I found myself, because they like to keep siblings together, with three babies, basically, you know, one and under, under the
triplets.
Triplets. That's really what it was. And I was like, there's a reason why this is such a real rare anomaly to have triplets, because this is inhumanly possible. So it was a very, very crazy season. We had four in diapers because my daughter with autism was still in diapers. And I don't know how I survived that season, but I wouldn't have it any other way now. Oh my goodness. Like, and the beautiful thing about our two, Isaac and Emma, that we adopted, I remember at the time, and I know, and you've probably talked about this before, Sandra, on a podcast, but we have this perception where we're like saving kids. And it's really not, and in some ways there's some truth to it, but it's just not really the most accurate perception, right? Like that shouldn't be the way we go about it. And, you know, I know a lot of people's intentions are right and that's their heart if they foster and adopt. But I realized it was almost like God kind of corrected me through that process. And I thought I was doing this great thing to help these children have a happy home. And there's some truth to that. But I realized in hindsight, God knew the story of my whole life and my family. And I tell you what, my two adopted children in so many ways have saved us and me, because I didn't know that I was going to have another child with autism and that it was going to require a lot out of us. It's just a different relationship too. Even like my oldest son, who's typical, like he would never have that, let's go play basketball, brother relationship, or, you know, defending my younger sister. Really, it's just a different, he's a caretaker for my kids with autism. Unfortunately, he's only 16. That's a hard pill to swallow, but this is the reality of our life. And just looking back now, I just see like God's hand in it all, that he knew. He knew that we all needed each other. You know, and Isaac and my son, Jacob with autism, they're like best friends. They still share a room, and he is like, it's just the most beautiful relationship to me. So I just always in awe, even though that season was hard, I'm just in awe of it all, what God's done.
I love that. And you unpack your motherhood journey in your new book, which is, I know as we record, it's going to be released in the next day or two, but this podcast is going to air the following week. So our listeners can know, they can grab this book. And it is called Unlimited Motherhood: Overcome 12 Limits That Overwhelm and Conflict Our Hearts. So I want to talk a little bit about your book, but let's start with what inspired you to write the book?
Honestly, it really was never on my radar. I was not planning to be a writer, to write anything. But really that season where I kind of hid away the 8 years. It was basically 8 years where I was a stay-at-home mom and pretty much limited in what I could do at all. That season, I feel like God taught me more in those 8 years than I had learned my whole life previous or even since then. And so God kind of challenged me as I was walking out of that season and my youngest daughter was finally in school and I had this opportunity. Wow, I can leave my house or I can work or I could do ministry again. So I actually went back to school to get my master's. But during that season, I was in an office a lot working at the college that I was attending. And God just said to me, there was nothing about writing a book or anything. He just said, I want you to write down everything that I've taught you over that 8 year kind of season of hiddenness. And it really was, I was reading through the whole Bible. I was trying to read the whole Bible in 6 months. So I was reading a lot of the Bible and I was overwhelmed by the word remember. It was constantly saying, remember, remember, you know, in the Old Testament, remember what I did for you and for, you know, the Israelite people. And it was just this, I have to remember what he did. You know, because I was still walking through a hard season and it was just, I need to remember the things he has done because he's done so many things. So it was completely for me. I just started writing it down on this big old computer. I didn't even own a laptop in the school offices of the college I was attending and nobody knew about it. And a couple months later, a group of women in our church said, hey, we'd love to pray over you. And we're trying to teach people how to pray out loud and pray for somebody. Would you like to come? And I said, absolutely. I'll never turn down free prayer. And I went. And at the end of it, one of the ladies praying for me said, I feel like I see a computer and something you just written. I feel like you're supposed to write a book. And wow. I was just like, not what, you know, I mean, even my husband, because it was just me remembering what God had done. My husband didn't even know I had this Word document where I was writing down all the things that God had done. So that, you know, kind of just simmered in me for a while. And I thought, okay, God, you know, I'm just going to take baby steps. So about 3 years ago, I just started taking baby steps. I did an online writing conference. I started listening to podcasts about writing. I just kept baby stepping and somehow we're here. So, but that really is, it's that 8 year season, what God taught me, how to surrender, how to be dependent upon him. Like it's all stuff we know. If you've been in Christian circles long enough, you have it in your head, but I think we don't actually do it. Yeah. We know it's the right answer. It's like in Sunday school, Jesus is always the right answer, right? Like, but are we living it and just being that gut-wrenching honest? Do I really trust you, God? So, yeah.
Wow. I love that. I have a little bit of a similar story to, you know, the story behind my book when I wrote my book. So I love how God confirms, right? He directs our steps and he calls it out and confirms it. So, and we just have to be faithful to that. So I got to be on your book launch team and got to pre-read the book before it was released. And I just couldn't put it down. It was one of those books that you can plow right through because they're page turners when you unpack so much of your story and the challenges, you know, and really how you grew in your faith. Mm-hmm. And you talk about really the early days of your faith and meeting your husband, getting married, becoming a youth pastor, becoming a mom, you know, having all those babies, you know, at the same time, just all of that. So I have a quote that I just loved.
Yeah.
So I'll read it and then I'm going to have you unpack it a little bit for us. Sure. So from your book, you wrote, may God use the fires of life and the weighty responsibility of parenting to strip us down to our scrawny selves. It's the only way Jesus can move us from a place of self-sufficiency to God reliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you want me to unpack that? It's so much easier said than done, right?
Yeah.
So I am the most independent person. Like I still to this day have to struggle because it doesn't matter what I'm planning or doing. It's like, I got it. I'll do it. You know, I don't want to bother anybody. I don't want to ask anybody. And I think that we can translate that into our relationship with God, where we try, especially as moms, because we try to be Jesus, to be the savior for our kids. And it just got to the point in my own personal life and with some of the hard things that my kids were going through that I realized I couldn't do it. Like you just, it's almost like you hit a wall and you realize this is so above me, whether it's an autism diagnosis or our kids' challenging behaviors, our kids' rebellion, our my adopted daughter went through this crazy season where she had a mass on her lungs at 4 years old, the size of a grapefruit. We spent 40 days at Boston's Children's Hospital. And I just remember thinking, I'm so offended by my own life. Like, how can all this stuff be happening? And it was this complete loss of control that, as much as God did not cause all of those horrible things, I don't necessarily believe that, he was using them to say, Jess, you can't do this without me. Like,
yeah,
not just the big hard stuff, all of the stuff. And that's where I say this stripping us down. It's the reality that, you know, and I was using the analogy in that part of the book you read of my kids love, it drives me crazy. It was like a cute story, but it's like really an annoying thing to me. They love to pull out the bin in our basement of all of our old Halloween costumes. And so, I mean, not even in October, like every month of the year. So in the summer, my son Isaac, my adopted son Isaac, and some of his friends are always wearing their, it's either like they've got the Hulk, they've got a Batman, and they all got those cotton abs and the big pecs and whatever. And they'll run all around and jump on our trampoline forever, but it's so hot out, right? And they have to eventually take it off. And we live right on the Grass River. And, oh, can we go swimming? We're so hot. We're so hot. And I remember the first time that that moment happened being like, that's us. Like, we pretend we have it all together and we try to be the super parent and we try to be super strong. And man, at some point you just realize, and the quicker we can get to that, the better, that how absolutely dependent we are on Jesus for our next breath and to remotely shape our kids, because you just realize how much of it is out of our control. And that's a scary realization, but it's not when you then from that realization, put your trust fully in him and not in our own capability.
Yeah, no, so good. Love that. Because we have to get to the end of ourselves, right? Before we can really, yeah, love that.
I was actually on a podcast interview last week, and the lady interviewing me, she's like, let's just hope we all don't have to get to the end of ourselves to like realize that. And I was like, no. I wish we could, but yeah. No, it seems to be we all have to hit that wall ourselves. Right. It's horrible, but yeah. It seems to be.
But I think that's where the Lord brings us, right? Because then once we're empty of self, then we're ready for what he wants to pour in. And yeah. So chapter 6, I think it was, the title of the chapter is The Pressure of Pain.
Yeah.
And you share, that's where you really share about your daughter, Mara, and her severe autism diagnosis, and how you really wrestled with God about that. You were really transparent, right? Most of us, you know, as Christian women, Christian parents, Christian moms, you know, we don't really want anybody to know
those
behind the closed door struggles that we're having and those very real conversations we're having with the Lord. So could you share a little bit more about that season, about that time?
Yeah. I mean, what was even harder, I mean, that's all hard for all of us, but I was a pastor. So I was like, oh, like me and my husband were pastors. So it's like, man, it's just hard to be a Christian and have those thoughts and doubts and struggles with God. It just felt even like 10 times harder because I'm supposed to be leading everybody else in their challenge of faith and trust. And so I think one of the biggest things that I realized in that season was I remember having a conversation with God saying, I love you. Like, I had gotten radically saved when I was a teenager. I saw a girl get healed right in front of me of dyslexia. Like, I knew how real God was. But I realized I had spent most of my life loving him, but not trusting him at all. Because it kept feeling, and this sounds bad to say out loud, but I really think God wants us to be honest. He already knows what we're thinking anyway. I just think it's silly. We're trying to create a facade for other people. Like, oh, we also want somebody to think bad of me. Like, who cares what anybody else thinks of me? It's only if God is the one that matters, his opinion matters. He already sees it all anyway. Why are we afraid to say these things out loud? But honestly, I just came to the point where I said, I can't trust you, God, because you've disappointed me over and over again. Right. Oh, there's a song, I can't think of it, but it's a worship song, and it says, "You've never failed me yet." And me and my husband are always like, "Doesn't feel like I can sing that line. I feel like I'm lying." Right. You know, I heard a quote once that it says, "Christians don't tell lies, they sing them." Right. And that's, you know, it felt like a lie. And so it's like, how can I trust you with my future? Or how can I even step out in faith in something you're telling me to do now, God, if I feel like you failed me here? In, you know, as a mom and with my daughter. And it really escalated, honestly, when my daughter got diagnosed. That was obviously heartbreaking. And the pain of that was so, it just broke me to pieces. But when my son later was diagnosed, that was a different pain. Because with my daughter, it was like a surprise, like a blow, a hit to the gut. We didn't even know what autism was. Where are you, God? My son being diagnosed felt like a real attack on me, like as far as my faith. Because we made a conscious choice. We said, God, we want to have a big family. God, we're going to choose to trust you. If we're to foster and adopt, so be it. If we're to have a biological child of our own, so be it. But the doctor had told us, you have a 1 in 4 chance of your future children being severely autistic. And we just made this conscious choice. It took a while. We weren't there like overnight. We said, no, we're not going to live it by fear. You know, we're not going to make a decision fear-based. We are going to make a decision based upon faith. And if it's in the cards, we'll have another biological child. And if he doesn't want us to have one, we won't. But so we kind of made this bold move. And then it was like, so that's where you're supposed to show up, God? And yeah. Like, yeah, save the day. And here we are at the same developmental center, going down the same highway, talking to the same exact doctors, getting the same severe autism diagnosis. And now we have 2 children that will forever be disabled and live with us for the rest of our lives. And I'm just like, okay, what's happening again?
Yeah.
So just the struggle that it was in my faith, but it just every time brought me to this place where God's just kept telling to me, like, you're not in control. And not again that he's causing bad things to happen. But the truth is just this reality of I keep trying to write my story. And he's like, I'm writing it. And you cannot keep stealing the pen from me. I never said, if you have another child, they won't have autism. I'm writing this story. And trusting him, not just in the, because we just kind of treat him, you know, and I don't think we do this, but I realized I was doing it. We treat God like a vending machine. It's like, if I put in these prayers or if I put my faith in this slot, then you're going to give me this good life. It's just not even in the Bible, let alone the broken, fallen world we live in, but it's not in the Bible. If that was the case in the Bible, then the poor disciples, like, they put in a lot of quarters and they all got killed. Like, I just don't think we get it. We have a different version of Christianity than the biblical version.
Yeah.
You know, so and so it, yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so good. Such wonderful insight, right? Just because we, you know, it's not a watered down Christianity. If you want the real deal, just open your Bible and everybody, right? Look at the suffering and the pain and the challenges that everybody in the Bible faced. It's not the easy life, right?
No.
So I love that. Another chapter, you address self-care. And I know as I was reading this at first, I'm like, dang, she's poo-pooing self-care. Because
I tell you what, that was the scariest part for me to actually keep in there. I was like, oh no.
But as you read, as you read through it, because I used to poo-poo self-care for myself. And then, you know, parenting, you know, when my boys became teenagers and we're doing the whole fetal alcohol syndrome thing. And it's like, oh, this is grief. Oh, and I do need some help here. But you weren't really poo-pooing that. But you really put it into perspective, because you were actually pointing out that self-care isn't the finish line, right? It isn't the goal. It's the pit stop along the journey. And I know you kind of use that analogy of a runner, you know, and happen to make those stops. And my husband watches race, like NASCAR or whatever it is. Yeah. Clearly I don't, but I do know that they make pit stops, right?
Yes.
But I have another quote from that section of your book. And you wrote, "The goal isn't self-care, but self-denial. The journey to the finish line will require you to lay down your life for others," right? That's what us as parents, right? Especially foster and adoptive parents, parents of kiddos with special needs. And then you write, will it be hard? Ridiculously hard. Will it be painful? Excruciating at times. Will you want to quit? Almost every day. Will it be worth it? Absolutely. Your purpose is found in the race, right? Yeah. I love that. And then, and it's that, you know, chapter you describe the challenges of going anywhere with your kids, right? Even being able to leave the house, you know, especially with your kiddos with autism. So can you describe a little bit more? Of course, we don't want you to give the whole book away because it is so worth reading all of it, but give us a little tease of what that season of life was like when you really couldn't leave, and what you learned from that.
Yeah. You know, I would joke and say I was a shut-in, but it wasn't really a joke. And it even got to the point where, you know, and I'm right with you as far as self-care, because I kind of, I've got this. And then I had a panic attack and then kind of a mental breakdown. So I didn't have it, right? Like, so there's a difference between just completely neglecting yourself and your health and your mental health versus, I see that the pendulum has swung a lot the other way, where it's like everything's about self-care.
Right.
And that's, it's empty. You know, I said it's like we're spoon-fed this propaganda that self-care is the end goal. It's the finish line, but it's not. It feels empty at the end. It's like, I remember I went 7 years into our marriage when, you know, struggles with our kids were really hard. So when I say a shut-in, like we couldn't do restaurants, we even McDonald's, like places that's loud and there's lots of kids there. We couldn't even do that. One of the things that we tried to do would, we said, get all of our kids in the car and say, let's go get ice cream. And so we'd pack them all in the car. Now, we wouldn't go into the ice cream shop because it was loud. There was people. My daughter, that was always the thing that triggered my daughter. We couldn't go to church. I was the pastor's wife and I didn't go to church for 8 years almost because she could not. We'd get her in the building. And then the minute the music was playing and there was a lot of people around her, she'd cover her ears and she'd scream and she'd run out of the building and scare all the new people away, which was not good. So during that whole season, the truth is, one of the things that we would do, because there was so little we could do as a family, we'd all get in the car, we'd go to get ice cream, and we'd go through the drive-thru. And there were literally times, like more times than I can count, where my daughter, for whatever reason, when we're talking on the intercom to the person, would start screaming, and we'd have to drive away before we even got the ice cream. Like, and so this is all my kids like going through this. Even the typical ones are suffering through this season of like unable to do anything. But really, one of the things that God showed me in that season, as hard as it was, and we still are super limited. Like my daughter's 15 now, but she still can do very little. She had a big meltdown at the library last week. Like it's super limiting. Is I kept, again, complaining to God, feeling like, God, I feel like I can't do anything. And he would always remind me of the Apostle Paul. And, you know, I don't know if you realize, but obviously New Testament, most of it was written by the Apostle Paul. All of his letters are in the, you know, that we see to the churches are in the New Testament. But a third of those he wrote from a prison cell. He wrote on house arrest, or he was, you know, in a Roman prison. And when he wrote those things, like Ephesians 3:20 is one of the main verses that I talk about in my book. It says, now him who is able to do immeasurably more than we could ever ask or imagine, according to his power that's at work within us. That's the Holy Spirit. To him be the glory in the church and in Jesus Christ through all generations forever and ever. Amen. He wrote that. Paul wrote that from a Roman prison cell. Can you, I'm just thinking, if I'm in prison and I'm writing the church that I pastor right currently, I'd be like, pray for me. It's cold. The food's terrible. They're talking about killing me. Please pray for me. Pray for me. Pray for me. That's where I think we have to get rid of this self-care versus self-denial. He didn't say any of that. He's literally saying, don't you get it? It doesn't matter where you are or what your situation is or what jail cell you're in or what that you're shut in or that your child's severely disabled. None of those things matter because we have the God of the universe, the Holy Spirit that lives inside of us. He is not limited by the confines of our lives. Are those confines real? Absolutely. My life has not changed much. I mean, my kids are older, but honestly, it's almost as limiting. Now I'm working part-time at the church. But besides that, the behaviors of my daughter actually have increased. So my life, in the practical sense, in the natural sense, has not changed much than it was 8 years ago when I was going through that season, you know, hidden season, kind of home, shut in. But yet at the same time, everything's changed because he's changed me. Because when I would say, God, I have a big problem. I have a life problem, God. Like, there's this really big problem. Jesus would say to me, Jess, you don't have a life problem. You have a faith problem. Mm. And I just kept being so challenged by that. I don't believe my problems and the things my kids are going through are bigger than you, God. And he's like, no. I'm way bigger than all of this. And I can still use you. I can still use your family. I can still do amazing things in and through your life and your kids, even the ones with disabilities. But you don't believe it. So you have the problem. The problem starts in you, not outside of you. Mm. And to me, that's been the biggest shift because, like I said, not much has changed in my life, but everything has changed. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. No, that is good. That is good. So a majority of our listeners are adoptive and foster parents like us, right? Parenting kids with special needs, some like me with prenatal exposure to alcohol or other drugs. So I found I also loved another quote, and I think it's chapter 7. But the quote, this is the quote, I'll read it and then I'll ask you a question about it. I found myself on a journey with special needs parenting I never intended to take. But Jesus's favorite spot to set up camp is the gap between the life you envisioned and the one you now live. We need to get comfortable living in the tension of what we thought and what God intended. For the surrendered Christian, this is home. Mm-hmm. So it kind of piggybacks what we were just saying, but I found that to be a powerful statement. So Jess, how have you gotten comfortable living the life of a special needs mom that you didn't intentionally sign up for?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I really didn't start to feel comfortable until that moment where I really surrendered to him. I talk about that some in chapter 5, and it's a process. It's not like a one magical moment where you're like, God, I give you my life. And because we pick it back up every day, but something in me died about a year after my daughter was diagnosed. And I mean, a good die, like something died in me. And then slowly, baby stepping, I started to trust, not that God would make my life better. See, that's where I think we get stuck. I started to trust that God is writing a better story. And that is hard to see when you're in the middle of chaos, when you're in the middle of pain, when you're in the middle of loss and behaviors and diagnoses. And it is hard to see. And the enemy whispers in your ear and says, this is not better. This is way, way worse. But I always think of that verse that Paul says, when I am weak. Now, we always misquote it and we say, when I am weak, God is strong. It doesn't say that. When I am weak, I am strong. We think we need to have like this cookie cutter nice life and feel blessed. And then that would be how we would write our story, like this good story with these happy kids and no problems and, you know, doing what we love for a job. And everything would just be like, if God could just do that for us, then our life would have more meaning and purpose and God could use us and all of our ducks would be in a row. And I think it really comes to this place where we say, my life looks nothing. Like, being honest, my life looks nothing like I imagined. And I have to trust the author who wrote my story before time began more than looking and saying what I think it should be like. It just never will be that way. And the quicker you can come to that place, but see, I think we do come to that place, but then we get really depressed because we believe, well, I guess this is my life. I guess I'll always have kids that have behaviors. I guess I'm always going to struggle. I guess I'm always going to be, you know, a stay-at-home mom. Or I guess my child will live with me forever or whatever it is we're struggling with. We just get sad there because we're not the faith piece is what's missing. We have to now believe that God's writing my story and it actually can be better. But it's more about what he's trying to do in me than what's happening around me. Like, I don't think we believe that. We're like, fix the stuff around, fix my kids, fix my situation, and then I'll be fine. Right. And he's like, no, I'm working on you. And when I start to grow you and teach you dependence and teach you trust and teach you surrender, then I'll start working through you, but I'm working on you. This stuff doesn't affect anything. Like, changing that won't change you. I'm into the changing you business. So.
Yeah. The growing your faith, right? The stretching your faith business. So Jess, how has your faith grown as you've walked the journey of being a special needs parent and adoptive mom, you know, all of the things that you're talking about? How has your faith grown?
Well, I'm reminded of, like, almost tormented by that verse, Hebrews 11:6, that it's impossible to please God without faith.
Mm.
And I always, like, thought, why does it say that? Why doesn't it say it's impossible to please God without love? Right? Corinthians 13, the greatest of these is love, faith, hope, and love. And the greatest is love. Love your neighbor as yourself. Love God. I'm like, why does that say faith there?
Mm.
Like, was that a typo, God? Because I think it should be love. Like, and I'm trying to love my kids and be the best mom I can. And I think you should be pleased by that. But I just realized that, I mean, you can't even come to Jesus without faith, because you have to believe who he is. He is who he says he is. And he rewards those who diligently seek him. And it's, you know, that word, if you translate it, it really just translates in the Greek to trust. It's impossible to please God without trust.
Yeah.
Dang. Like, if you ask me, man, what's the one thing you want to do? I want to please God. I want to please God with my life. Does that mean, like, we're not going to heaven if you don't have a lot of faith? I'm not saying that. Like, he says all you need is the faith of a mustard seed, right? Like, so if that's all you got right now, that's great. But there's a difference between going to heaven, because Jesus paid that price. I'm not getting into heaven, but with the measure of faith that I have. But there's a difference between going to heaven one day and pleasing him. I just realized, man, this is way harder. But I want to trust him. And so it's been this journey. It's a journey for every one of us. And I think a lot of times the devil gets in there and he lists out all the ways that God's failed us, and he convinces us, see, God's not trustworthy. Like, this happened, then this happened, then you went through that divorce, then your child was diagnosed, and then you tried to adopt, or, you know, fostered, and that kid was taken out of your home. And you just feel this sense of, like, oh yeah, I can't trust God. I got to figure this all out myself. And you almost get frantic, and you question your faith, and is all this real? And you just get to this. The enemy loves to get in there then, because I really believe it's more than just trusting him with the things that happen, like the bad things and the good things that happen in our life. I believe if we do not grow in our faith, we can't step out in the next thing he calls us to do.
Yeah.
And so we're never on the offense. We're always on the defense when it comes to the kingdom of God, because there's no way. God's telling me to, you know, create justice for orphans. God telling me to start this podcast for autism parents. I'm not going to do it. It's too scary. It's too risky, because I can't actually trust God with my life anyway. How can I trust that he's telling me to do this thing? And so the enemy, his greatest tactic is to get in there and get you to convince, like, God's not trustworthy. He's not trustworthy. Cause then you'll never be on the offense. You'll be on his team, really, in a lot of ways, because you're just going to shrink back from all he's calling you to do. So it's baby steps, man. At the end of the day, you cannot arrive there overnight. You just have to take one baby step at a time. And things still won't always go as you picture, but in hindsight, you see God getting glory through it all. Like, I didn't ever imagine having two kids with severe autism. Like, that was not in my plan. But now, years later, it's like we've done this podcast. It's like, wow, God, I have this whole ministry that I get to minister to all of these families going through the same heartache and the same struggles and the same questions that I had. But I get to be the person that they needed. Talk about a life of purpose.
Yeah,
I couldn't have written that myself.
Yeah.
It's worth it. You know, me and my husband have said, as hard as this has been, already we can say, and we're not in heaven with, like, an eternal perspective, it's worth it. It's worth it, because look at what God's doing. in and through our lives. And that's what I just, anyone that's listening, you might think, well, that's not true for me. And I just want to encourage you, like, there's no special people in the kingdom of God. There's just available people. There's people that say yes.
Yes.
And choose to trust even when they can't see. Choose to believe even when they're doubting. Choose to take a baby step of faith even when they're scared. That's all he requires of us. And then he shows up and does like stuff that blows your mind. And you're like, how did that happen? I don't know how it happened, because it was God, but it was you stepping out in faith.
I love that. Love that. We just have to say yes and trust him, right, for what's on the other side. Another quote that I love from your book is this: when we feel incapable, and this goes along with really what you were just saying, when we feel incapable, his supernatural strength is on display. Mm-hmm. When we are weak, he is strong, right? Chapter 9 is raw and powerful. It's titled The Heaviness of Hiddenness. Mm-hmm. And I think so many of us, you know, including our listeners who are parenting kids with trauma histories, parenting kids with prenatal exposure, it's hard and it can be very isolating, which is definitely a season that you experience. So would you share a little bit more about your season of what you call hiddenness? So, like I said, so many of our listeners may also feel unseen or hidden, as you describe.
Yeah. I mean, I think so many times our identity is tied to how people perceive us or to what we do. And so when you become a special needs parent, especially, you know, like, none of us planned that. Like, hey, when I get older, I want to be a special needs parent. Like, no one says that, but it happens. And so a lot of times it causes you to withdraw. It causes you to have to stop working or, you know, stop doing ministry. And you find yourself in this season taking care of someone who can't fully take care of themselves. And I mean, there's two things that God just showed me so much during that season. One was how much my identity was wrapped up in things that were not who I really was, right? Like a youth pastor or this thing or that thing and what people in the community, all that different stuff. Like when it all fades away, all I had was Jesus and my kids and my husband, right? And when Jesus is all you have, you realize Jesus is all you need. And there can, if you get past kind of like, for me, it was a complaining season. So a year and a half of complaining, I started to like really be intimate with Jesus in the sense that I never had before, because he was like, it was like a tunnel vision. Mm. Now I had to take care of my kids. I had a busy, like a lot of responsibilities, but there was some kind of like an inner, I don't even know how to describe it. It was less like, oh, I spent 2 hours of quiet time with Jesus today, because there's never 2 hours in my house of quiet time. I have five kids, right? But it was like this inner connection. Like I just started to feel like he was with me. And one of the stories in the Bible that continually reminded me of that was the story of Hagar in, you know, the Old Testament, you know, and basically how she, you know, it's a long story, and she's a pregnant mom, and she gets tossed aside and thrown into kind of the wilderness, and she's all alone and no one to take care of her. And the angel of the Lord shows up, which people believe, you know, in the Old Testament when it references that, is that it was Jesus. And she actually is the only person in the Bible that gives God a name. And she says, you know, you are El Roi, or the God who sees. And you see me. And there's just this moment when I was reading that in the middle of that 8-year season, that it was this intimate moment, like when no one else sees me, you see me every time I'm, you know, brushing their teeth and giving them a bath and doing all of these things behind closed doors that feels unvaluable to the world, but it's so valuable to him. And there's, you know, a book that's referenced in the Bible called the Book of Remembrance. And I really think, I can't prove this theologically, but there's a library in heaven. Mm-hmm. And we know the Book of Life's up there, but we also see there's this Book of Remembrance referenced in the Bible. And I believe he records every selfless act we do, specifically the ones no one knows about, right? And so as you care for your child, you know, with whatever they're struggling with, and nobody else is seeing it, I'm telling you, he's writing that stuff down. And one day, I know right now in this world we live in, you don't feel like there's any reward, but I believe one day there is going to be an eternal reward for all those sacrifices that moms are making, dads too, but behind closed doors, just day in, day out, faithfully caring for somebody besides themselves. And to me, that's the most beautiful. That is love. Like caring for someone who can't fully even give back in return, that is love. Like my daughter with autism, like she loves me the best she can, but we can't have that mother-daughter relationship where we can share our hearts and, oh, mom, I bought you something. Like there's, I don't have that reciprocating end of things. Of course, she blesses me just by being her, but to continually love someone when it's hard and when you have to take care of their every need is, that is Jesus with skin on. And I believe he's going to reward everyone that's doing it one day.
I love
you
that.
You guys were Jessica. All, you know, everybody listening that's in that place, you'll be sitting on the thrones.
Love that. Now, the book is titled Unlimited Motherhood, Overcome 12 Limits That Overwhelm and Conflict Our Hearts. It is a must read for moms, I would say. And I'm even planning on giving a copy to my daughter and my two daughter-in-laws who are all moms now. So it would make a great Mother's Day gift as well. But I recommend it to everybody who's listening if you're a mom. So Jessica, where can we find your book if we wanted to get a copy?
Yeah, so it's available anywhere books are sold. If you kind of want to know a little bit more about me, you can go to www.jessicahurlbut.com. And Hurlbut spelled just like it sounds, H-U-R-L-B-U-T. But our podcast link and all the information for the Full Spectrum Parent podcast is there. My book information's there and a lot of the places online that you can buy it. And then, of course, I do write it used to be weekly. It's more like monthly blog and kind of just share devotionals and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's all in one place.
So jessicahurlbut.com, and we will put a link to your website on in the show notes for this podcast episode. You're also on social media, so folks can find you there. And give us the name again for your podcast, because that is really a key resource as well.
Yeah, it's called the Full Spectrum Parent Podcast.
Excellent. Yep. So check that out if autism is part of your story with your kiddos.
It's actually the only Christian autism parenting podcast in existence. So if you've been looking, because I know when my daughter was first diagnosed, I looked everywhere for Christian books, Christian resources. Well, podcasts weren't quite a thing yet. Anything, interviews, and I couldn't find almost anything. And so when me and my husband started this podcast 2.5 years ago, we said, we want to be the person we need. So we talk about all the things, but we're also pretty open, vulnerable, raw, kind of our struggles, things that have worked with our children, things that haven't, even our faith struggles. And I just think it's important to just feel like you're not alone in it.
Love that. Love that. Again, we will put links to your website so folks can easily find you and all of your resources in the show notes. So scroll down and look for those if you're listening and you want to connect with Jessica. And I just want to say thank you, Jessica, for encouraging and inspiring our moms, especially today. Your book, wonderful resource. Congratulations on the book launch. It's out there. Love it. And I hope our listeners will take advantage of that resource. So thank you so much for all you're doing.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for being with us today. Wow, what a great conversation. I hope that you were inspired and encouraged by Jessica's story. I hope that you will check out her book. Such an incredible book. We're going to put a link in the show notes to her book, her website. You'll be able to find her podcast. So if autism is something, you know, in your world, you're parenting kiddos with autism, or you know families who are, that's a wonderful resource as well. So again, thank you so much for listening today. Hope you were inspired and encouraged. Remember that in addition to inspiring and encourage you, we want to equip you for your parenting journey as well, especially if you suspect or know that the kiddos that you're raising were prenatally exposed to alcohol or other drugs. We've got lots of resources for you, from parent and caregiver coaching to our support group. to this podcast, of course, and the FASD workshops that I lead in person and online. So make sure that you check out our website, justicefororphansny.org, for all of those resources. I also had that opportunity last year to travel out to Focus on the Family and record some video modules on FASD parenting out at Focus. And I wrote a cornerstone article, an in-depth article on FASD, which is found on their website. You can find it super easy by going to my personal website, which is sandraflack.com, where I blog as well really try to engage with fellow adoptive and foster parents, especially moms caring for kids with FASD and trauma and all the things. And on my website, there's also a link that will take you right to that article and the video modules. So make sure you check that out. I would be honored. Remember, again, subscribe, follow, leave a review. It helps other parents be able to find this podcast. Kind of like what Jessica mentioned, we believe that this is a resource that I know I wish I had had way back when we first adopted our kids and needed this kind of resource and this kind of support. So when you find it, follow it, and leave a review, it helps other parents and caregivers be able to find it easily as well. And of course, we are also on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at Justice for Orphans, as well as me, myself, Sandra Flack. You can find me there on all those platforms as well. And here we are at the end. I am so grateful that you chose to spend your valuable time with me today. I am grateful to have you along for the journey.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Adoption and Foster Care Journey Podcast, brought to you by Justice for Orphans. We hope you were encouraged today. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review and share it with your fellow foster and adoptive parent friends so they can be encouraged too. Be sure to find and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. And check out our website for vital resources at justicefororphansny.org.